Welcome to Juno Afternoon on this first Friday of February. I'm Andy Klein, and coming up on today's show, Riley Woodford's going to stop by to share details of this Saturday's Gold Street Concerts. We'll hear about the collage art of Doralyn Alper. The Juno Community Foundation joins us to discuss their work with the Juno Nonprofit Housing Development Council. And the Juno Strings Ensemble will give us a preview of this weekend's concert. That's ahead on Juno Afternoon. Hope you'll stay tuned and join us. And checking out the weather, scattered rain and snow showers are likely before 10 o'clock tonight, then scattered snow showers, mostly cloudy skies and a low around 29 degrees, 10 to 15 mile an hour winds. For tomorrow, snow showers likely mainly after 1 p.m. and cloudy with a high near 34 degrees, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. And for Saturday night, snow showers likely mainly before 10 p.m. Cloudy, low around 30 degrees for Saturday night and east winds around 5 miles an hour. Then for Sunday, rain and snow showers likely again mainly after 4 p.m. and cloudy with a high near 36 degrees for Sunday night, rain and snow. Monday, rain and snow as well, and rain Monday night, then snow before 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and rain and snow on the forecast for both Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday. So a little mix-up of rain and snow likely. Highs hovering right around freezing and lows right in that same range as well, high 20s and low 30s.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akhwan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka K Jin Tauk Anakaya Haanikuk Gunish Cheese.
Clip there of Aaron Heist, one of the great musicians that's going to be playing once again on the Gold Street Concert Series. And Riley Woodford is here to give us the good news about the Gold Street Concert Series starting back up. Riley, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here in your one of your many hats, but in your capacity as a musician and someone who I guess is helping organize the Gold Street Concerts. Yeah. Tell me a little bit of what's the history of Gold Street Concerts, first of all?
Well, it started about 20 years ago. Buddy Tabor and who else was it? It was Terry and Frederick Hoskinson and Elva Montrager and, you know, small group of volunteers, basically. And a few people that kind of came and went. Libby Sterling was in it for a while, Libby Stringer. And so people pitched in and made it happen. And, you know, the original idea was to do the format that we have now, you know, to have 5 20-minute sets with a 20-minute intermission. So you have a 2-hour show. 20-minute sets, and then do a mix of people that were well-known musicians in town that would be a draw, and then new people who didn't get a lot of exposure, maybe were up and coming, or didn't play in bars, you know, people that didn't do, you know, that kind of music, songwriters, and
maybe
so,
didn't have an hour and a half full set of music to play and that kind of thing as well, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, and you know, a showcase where people are there to listen, and it worked out. It worked out great. I mean, it was a really nice format, and people liked it, and it went.
Now, was it originally on Gold Street? Was it like at the feeders, or was it at the old VFW or something?
No. It was in a space that they called the Undercroft.
The Undercroft.
It was down by the mustard seed.
Okay.
You know? So it was in. It was on Gold Street.
Gold Street.
And of course that burned down in 2007 completely.
Yeah.
Feeders Hall, the church, everything, Holy Trinity,
right.
And then it's been rebuilt, and it's a beautiful building, and I suspect. You know, Aaron Elmore and folks with Theater in the Rough had some input on the acoustics, and it's so the concerts are right in the church. They call it the nave.
Yes,
I think that's a Episcopal word for.
But in that sanctuary. Performance space that's there that was built, or is it in the actual church?
No,
itself?
It's in the actual.
It's in the church itself. Yeah. Okay.
So downstairs, I think what they call McFeeters Hall now is the downstairs where the theater productions,
right,
and they have
right.
the nice raked, you know, seats, and plays were there. The Witch was there,
yep,
and that.
Right.
So no, this is right in the church where Sunday morning they have services and stuff, and it's got good acoustics. I mean, you have to project a little bit, but we always wanted it to be acoustic. We didn't want to have a sound system and turn it into a giant production that would require, you know, sound person and monitors and mics. And so you just get up and play.
And that church is nice. It's not a massively huge space, right? You know, it's nice and big enough, but it's not like you have to fill up a huge hall.
No, it's not like Northern Lights
or
something.
Right.
I mean, I think that room seats probably close to 300 people
and
the Holy Trinity Church seats a little more than 100, 130, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good size.
Cool.
Father Gordon Blue and I got together last week, and he showed me the exact spot to stand. He said, this is where I, you know, do my preaching from, and the acoustics are best right here. He said, go in the back row and I'll talk to you from this spot.
That's
just
cool.
In front of the altar. And then he walked around a little bit, and then I spoke and he walked around and we compared it. And so that's where we're going to put the musicians.
Well, tell me, so tell me about getting it back going again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
The pandemic hit, right?
Pandemic,
So the last show was 3 years ago in March. So we're almost on the third anniversary, and, we did it's always the first Saturday of the month. So, and it's just in the winter. So it's October through March, you know, and so March of 2020, that was it. I mean, we did a show, and I remember Libby Sterling was the host, and she was telling everybody, wash your hands and wash for 20 seconds and, you know, this and that. And we were all, nobody knew anything about what was coming, of course. And that was it. I mean, that was the last show. And so we tried to kind of get it started 6 or 8 months ago for the season, and it was just people weren't ready. People were not rehearsed. Musicians were out of practice.
Yeah.
Audiences weren't quite ready. But by January, they were ready. So we did a show in January, and it was a good turnout. People were happy to play and happy to come. And so we've restarted it. We'll do this show Saturday, and then another one in March, and then we'll take the summer off and pick back up in the fall.
And then it gets start getting cranked back up more. Yeah, fully. Yeah. Well, that's great. So tell me about who's up, who's coming up in this re-inaugural.
The re-inaugural Gold Street Music,
right.
Actually at Gold Street.
Actually at Gold Street.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So I'm going to play with Kyle Newman, who's, you know, been in town 2 or 3 years, and we both play guitar. I'm going to be playing a resonator guitar, a lot of slide guitar. He plays guitar and harmonica, and we're just doing some of our favorite songs. We learned a new song. He taught me a couple of songs that he knew that I'd never heard before.
Is the resonator, is that like a steel guitar kind of?
It's like a steel guitar. Yeah.
And you've been playing that for a while, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of your, I don't know if I've seen you play a resonator before.
No, I mostly play electric guitar now, but, I've been playing it. There's just not a lot of call for slide guitar music. So that's another reason to do something like this. Have
cool.
a project where you can work up, you know, 5 or 6 songs,
right.
Do 20 minutes of slide guitar. So, yeah, so we'll do a set. And then Aaron and Andrew, Aaron, who we heard just a minute ago, Aaron Heist. And then Andy Miller, who I don't know if you know, but he's a songwriter. He plays piano. It'll be nice to have piano, you know, somebody playing a different instrument, and we'll get that set up for him. He writes really funny songs.
Yeah, no, I do know. Now, when you started describing him a little bit, I remembered. Oh wait, I do know him
from Folk Fest.
Yeah, from Folk Fest, yeah. And these like really amazing songs.
Very funny.
He writes. Very funny, very lyrically based, and good. But
that's
you know,
the guy.
Yeah, that's the guy. So anyway, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So then we'll take a little break. You know, have about 15-20 minutes, eat some cookies and stuff. If you bring cookies, you get in free. So it's nice to have a little intermission.
Is that a long-standing policy for?
Yeah, that was part of their original design to
bring
do it that
cookies.
Way. Have a break there. Then Katie Henry's going to get up and do a 20-minute set, and then Tony Tangs and a couple of friends, Gordon Sandy, Doug Badilla, and Mike Busey will play with him. And so Tony tends to do original songs. Katie also tends to do original songs. So
that's cool. That's like, you know, some of the people that are sort of the institutional stalwarts of Juno music scene, like Tony, and then new people as well.
Correct.
The guy that you're playing with, tell me his name again one more time.
Kyle Newman.
And how did you find out about Kyle or start working with him?
Well, he bought the house across the street
from me. Oh, well, there you go.
And and I actually moved over by the Federal Building, and we were both moving into our houses at the same time, and we were both unloading guitars and musical instruments. And we just looked across the street at each other and was like, hey, let's talk.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it took a couple of weeks and we started playing together and hit it off.
But you say he just came to town a few years ago, so maybe he hasn't played too much in town, I'm guessing.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. He hasn't performed very much. He played a lot. He grew up in California, but he lived for a while in Portland and played quite a bit of music there, and mostly played harmonica in bands there. But he's playing a lot of guitar. He sings well. He sings and stuff. So, yeah, he's a marine scientist. So he's a lot of his focus is work.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's
like a lot of us.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of us. So yeah, but it's great. But yeah, his wife's a marine scientist too, and they both. So that's what brought them to Juno. But it's great, and he's really jumped into the music scene. He's now doing sound down at the Crystal.
Oh, okay.
So, in fact, he'll be doing sound for the band that's playing there tonight.
All right.
And it's nice. It's nice. He's got a good broad base in music and sound engineering and all that stuff.
That's always great to have that in the back pocket. Yes. Understanding sound, very key thing. Yeah.
And now we're playing a gig with no sound.
Right.
So it's all about projecting.
Yeah.
And Gordon told me, he said, slow down. I'm probably talking too fast right now. He said, slow down. He said, I've learned, you know, as a priest, you know, he's got to talk slower. Doesn't have to necessarily raise his voice, but he's like, talk slow.
Just allow the sound to fill the space, sort of. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So, and I'm emceeing tomorrow too. And so I'm reminding myself, okay, slow down, introduce people, enunciate, and all of that. So, it was really nice going through it with a guy that actually knows that room. So,
yeah, that's cool. And so just tell people the particulars if they want to go tomorrow.
Yeah. So it's 7:30. So we start at 7:30 sharp and try to keep the sets really tight, you know, because if everybody's 5 minutes over, pretty soon you're half an hour late. And they, you know, they have church there in the morning. So we got to reset the room for them perfectly so they can get at 8:30, they can do their mass. So 7:30 sharp, doors open at 7:00. You have a half hour to come in, get a seat, and it's $5 or bring cookies. And, you know, we'll bring some cookies. We'll have the library room up there. It'll be set up for the intermission. And it's at 4th and Gold, corner of 4th and Gold, the Holy Trinity Church there.
Yeah, Holy Trinity Church is a beautiful, newer facility. We think of it as new. Of course, it's 10 years more old now, but...
Yeah, but it does feel brand new.
It seems new.
And, you know, it's nice working in there, too, and going in there because it's a new building.
Yeah.
And it's a nice building. And, you know, the hall downstairs is very nice, too. So, and let's see. They had been requiring masks, but when I met Gordon the other day said masks optional. So I think that varies a little bit. I certainly bring a mask because you never know.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're in a crowd of people too, sometimes it's just preferable.
Yeah.
There's parking either up, you know, in the toward the Catholic Church up the hill at the Arctic Corps building up there where the doctor's offices are. There's parking lots up there or down at ASME and, you know, down on 3rd and Gold. So there's actually pretty good parking down there.
Especially Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, 7:30 or 7 o'clock. Yeah. It's not, the bars aren't really taken off yet, and it's in the neighborhood.
Right.
So.
Well, Riley, so good to see you, and thanks for letting us know about this and for getting Gold Street Concert Series cranking back up again.
We'll have one more. So we'll have one more in March, and then we'll be back up going. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit more of Aaron's song here. This one's called Black Dog Blues. This is Aaron Heist, who will be playing tomorrow at the Gold Street Concert Series, as well as a number of other local talents. Thanks, Riley. That's Aaron Heist, who'll be performing tomorrow night at the Gold Street Concert Series. And joining me now, it's First Friday, so let's, of course, have an artist that's going to be showing over at the Juno Artist Gallery. Dorlin Alper is with me. Dorlin, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And you describe the artwork you're going to be doing as Juno with a twist. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay, so tell me, what's the twist?
What's the twist?
What is this intrigue?
Yeah.
Very interesting. And you actually brought some in, too. So I'll look at some in just a moment. But
Yeah. So I have some photos I had taken of Juno. And I was looking at those photos and kind of being really intrigued by them. And then I got to turning them a different way on my phone. And I thought, that photo looks like something else.
So you took photos on your phone.
Yes.
And you just were actually kind of manipulating your phone or just holding it in different ways?
Just holding it in different ways.
Yeah.
And for an instance, maybe there was a reflection of the mountains in the water. And together, it looked like a person when you took the reflection on one side and the mountain on the other. Or perhaps it looked like a dog or a wolf. And so I took those and put those in a new environment with some collage and paint and monotype, and created a picture.
These are the things that we do with clouds all the time. But you, with an artist's eye, are looking at things that normally I would look at it and just be very literal. And I would say, that is a tree and a pond, and that's all it is. But you, with your artist's eye, were able to say, no, don't you see that there's a wolf there? Or don't you see there's a bear or there's something else there?
Yeah.
Did you, when you say the themes that you just talked about seem to be reflective of Alaska themes, like a wolf, for instance, did you try to interpret it in that way or did you just let yourself go freeform?
I just let myself go freeform. And it was quite interesting what came up.
So tell me, give me an example of some of the things that you saw, and the more you looked at it, the more it became apparent to you that it was something else.
Well, one of them was a reflection that looked just like a wolf or a dog kind of wolf, a wolf-looking dog. And
friendly wolf.
A friendly wolf.
Right.
But yeah. And then I used
collage. They're never friendly, by the way. Never fall for that.
Yeah.
So you used collage. So that was the medium you ended up using was you didn't paint over it. Instead, you sort of you used other media elements.
Paper. Within the picture.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so were you taking like actual photographs and things like that? Or were you just taking more like just samples of colors?
I took the actual photographs and then I cut them up. So I got them printed out, some on canvas, some on regular photo paper. And then I cut them into pieces and did different things with the pieces of it.
That must have been a bit of a moment in a way, right? You have this nice photo. It's there you go. You got it blown up. It's on canvas and you just get out the scissors.
Yeah, get out the scissors and cut it up.
And you start cutting it up.
Yeah.
And so have you ever done that sort of thing before? Have you worked in that way before?
I hadn't. So this was a whole new thing because I always thought I like photos, but how do I display them? Because I didn't want just a photo. And so I just got curious about it and tried some things. And then one thing led to another.
Did you then use paint or colors or other things as well? Or how did you then build out this painting? Is it with glue or how did that process go?
So I started with a jelly plate And so that's like a piece of jello that you can paint on top of. And then when I did that, I took another blank piece of paper and I rubbed over the top of it and transferred the color over. And that became the base for the painting. And then I found some old books, and I also had a lot of collage papers that I'd previously made with other paint on them. And I might have tore them or cut them out, and I started building a landscape. And then I inserted the photo within the landscape, and then maybe even added some paint on top of the photo in some cases.
Were you doing this in order to be kind of build a show for this first Friday? Was that in mind, or did this work happen and then you kind of realized, oh, I've got a collection, I'll put it up for the February first Friday?
Yep. Which
the order?
Second one
the
is
second
exactly
one.
What happened.
Okay.
Yes.
You kind of got inspired and started working in this way.
Yes.
How long have you been doing it?
I've been an artist all my life, but this particular one started in December when I had some days off from work and was able to devote some time to making art.
Yeah, very cool. Well, part of what the Juno Artist Gallery brings is this ability for artists to have a freedom to work in different formats, because you don't necessarily feel like you have to fill up a gallery, right? You can just have a certain amount of space.
Yes.
And maybe you just do 10 works or something like that, and that's enough.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's always cool to talk to people that are working in the Juno Artist Gallery, because it feels like you have a certain amount of freedom.
You have a lot of freedom.
Yeah, right. And artists thrive with freedom.
Yes.
Well, it's first Friday tonight, so it's starting kind of in a minute, right? It starts at about 4:30, something like that.
Yeah. So from 4:30 to 6:30, we have it officially there, and we'll have food again this time. So come on out and eat something and see some art.
All right. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much. It's the Juno Artist Gallery, and it's first Friday. So Juno Artist Gallery is just one of the many great stops that you can take today as you're walking around town. Dorlin Alper is the artist we've been talking to. She's the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery for this first Friday of February, and working in collage and photographs and collage, and maybe seeing something in photographs that you wouldn't at first see, and expressing that second vision, third vision, fourth vision.
Yeah, well said.
of the photographs.
So Dorlin, there's the twist.
Yes, that's the twist. Dorlin, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it and talking to us about it, and have a great first Friday.
Thank you.
Okay, well, coming up next, here's Riley Woodford himself, who we just talked to, and this is Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. On a sunny July day in 2022, a half dozen biologists are picking their way along the edge of the high tide line above a rocky beach on Annette Island at the southern edge of southeast Alaska. They're searching amid the rocks and beach grass for signs of an invasive species. European green crabs have become established in the waters of northern British Columbia. Ocean currents could easily carry green crab larvae north into Alaska waters, where eelgrass beds offer great habitat. So a few dozen miles to the north, biologists in Alaska are engaged in early detection monitoring. And on this day, they're looking for crab shells, the molted carapaces of invasive crabs. Crabs shed their armor-like exoskeleton, the carapace or shell, as they grow. European green crabs molt about 4 times in their first 2 years. And once shed, the light carapace is easily carried on the high tide up to the beach. One biologist spots a small carapace, the first evidence that European green crabs have reached Alaska. 2 more molted shells were found that July day, and over the following months, several hundred live green crabs were caught in crab pots in the area. Biologists are now focused on responding to this invader. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And Amy Skilbred is here. She's the executive director of the JCF, the Juno Community Foundation. And Amy, thanks so much for coming in. And we're going to talk a little bit about maybe a little overview of some of the work that you guys do in general, but then specifically about the Housing Development Council, the Juno Nonprofit Housing Development Council. But welcome. Thanks for coming in, Amy.
Well, hi, Andy. Glad to be here.
Good
great to see you.
See you as well. And yeah. Great to have you here. And I've got you in the studio here, and the Juneau right. Community Foundation has become such an important institution in the fabric of so many of the positive things that happen in Juneau. And so I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that.
Sure.
The Juneau Community Foundation, overview for people who maybe see that acronym around or have heard about it but don't know the specific mission. What's the mission of the Juneau Community Foundation?
So Juneau Community Foundation, and I never use the acronym.
The JCF, I'm sorry. Yes.
You know it. So the foundation, though, our mission is to grow philanthropy, which means increase giving and meet the needs of the community. And so give out the money. And so that's what we're about.
It's very broad.
So we go from everything to an individual artist award to giving out the Hope CBJ funds, which are about $2.25 million in social service grants that we're working on right now.
When you mentioned that, that's an interesting way that you kind of just in those two things covered the full spectrum. Are there certain kind of big things that you've developed that you work through every year, or what are some of those kind of large things?
Yeah, we have four community impact funds is what we call them. And one is youth and education, and they give out a youth equity grants. And those primarily go to Zach Gordon at this point to support kids being able to attend activities and camps who might not otherwise have the means to do that. And then our Arts and Culture Community Impact Fund, and that one is working on the Individual Artists Award, and they've developed an Arts Endowment and Arts Vibrancy Endowment. And we have a Parks, Trails, and Recreation focus as well. And that one did things like build the Hilda Dam Cabin and raised the funding for the Treadwell Ditch Trail replacement. A lot of other smaller projects we've helped out on. And then the last one is the Health and Social Service Community Impact Fund. And that's the main one for today.
Yeah, I was going to say that when you came in, you said, well, one thing I want to talk about is food.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
food and housing.
Yeah.
And it's like back to basics. People need food and housing. And one of the things that we've found is got a bunch of people together this fall to look at food and what the needs were. And quickly what rose to the top was what was going to happen to who was going to provide the food boxes for kids for the winter break, which was 19 days long. So we stepped in, we had a donor come in, and my board supported and raised about $200,000 for feeding Juneau kids. And basically that fund is going to be used for the vacation boxes to assist with the weekend food bags. And it's 480 to 500 kids getting food in these programs.
Is the foundation kind of stepping into a breach that used to be provided in some other way, or?
Well, we typically don't run the program ourselves. So we partner with incredible nonprofits and people across town who want to get things done. We did step into a breach for the vacation food boxes, and we're able to come up with the funds and make that happen with a lot of assistance from United Way, the school district. We had several sports teams that came and helped out with packing the bags and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it worked really well.
It's interesting because it just makes me think it speaks to the flexibility that a foundation that's really focused on one community or on a very specific area, you have the ability to be very pretty nimble.
Nimble.
Yeah.
That's the right word.
Right.
We, when we see that there's something that needs to be done, we take a deep breath and say, okay, into the breach, here we go. Let's go get it done.
Right.
And so on food, just one last thing for folks, because of the SNAP problems of people not being able to get SNAP benefits and the closure of Helping Hands. The Southeast Alaska Food Bank is definitely looking for donations to support purchasing food in order to be able to provide food. I think they've gone from about 100 people visiting their pantry to 400 to 500. So the need is great in our community, and give directly to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank for that.
Well, that's a really interesting kind of tip for people that are wanting to know, you know, where is their, where would their funds be best used as a charity or as a donation?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we're, like I said, back to basics a bit here.
A real acute need happened there. Now, is that just because of these agencies that closed, or is it also an economic stressor happening?
I think the big issue may be the SNAP benefits, and that the for a variety of reasons, not any of which I know, the state has had a lot of delay in getting those benefits approved. So usually SNAP benefits are approved for people within a month. And now I think there's some people who have been waiting for 6 months. And that would be things like food stamps and other assistance to get food. And so I think that's causing a real problem. And there's been a couple articles about it. But it's not only here. It's across the state.
Yeah.
So.
That's the food piece.
That's
now, other part of the focus that and something that I know that you're cooperating on and working with is the Juneau Nonprofit Housing Development Council. So tell me a little bit about the mission of that council. And
definitely. So the mission of that council and the vision is that all people in Juneau live with dignity and safe, affordable housing. And basically, as someone said, the only way you get rid of homelessness is you put people in houses. And so this is actually not a nonprofit, but it's a collaborative effort. And what they are doing, and it brings together all of the nonprofits in town that house people who are otherwise homeless. And basically, we're talking about people whose income is equal to or less than 30% of the area median income. So it's the very lowest of the low. A lot of them no income other than maybe Social Security, SSI, things like that. And what they have figured out is that they actually have to be building the housing that's needed. And so this group has come together and is actively building about 14 units. Individual organizations are building, you know, the Glory Hall is building 7 apartments in the old Glory Hall downtown. Aware is building 7 apartments. The St. Vincent de Paul is just recently taken over the Channel View apartments so that they don't lose housing for folks as well. And then things that are coming up that we've all been getting together for every Thursday morning since the middle of September. All of the executive directors of these organizations are meeting to figure out what are we doing next and how do we do that. And out of that has come 2 projects that were, one is moving forward pretty quickly, and that's 21 more units on Housing First. So it's Housing First Phase 3.
Out in Lemon Creek there?
In Lemon Creek. Yep. And that's been extremely successful with the 64 units of supportive housing. So people who live there get a lot of support as well.
So go back on that. Yeah. So there are now 64 units as part of that Housing First. That's because when it was first built, as I remember, it was something like 14.
Well, it was 32.
32.
So it was half of it.
Okay. So they've built out the second half and now they're going to build another 21?
Yep.
Wow.
And that'll probably complete it for the size of the property.
Right.
So, yeah. So that'll be great. And then we've been working with Catholic Community Services because they have a building that's affectionately called Big Pink, which is right next to the Adult Bridge Day Center. And it hasn't been used for several years. And so it's sort of, how do we refurbish that building? Or how do we assist Catholic Community Services with doing it?
It's an interesting thing, isn't there? There seems like there's some vacant properties in Juneau, right? And then what to do? Is there a way to get those properties to where they can be useful and used in this way?
Exactly.
It's really interesting that you say that there's a meeting. There's sort of this interesting meeting that happens every Thursday.
It's just this group.
And that's a fascinating thing to think about. Really trying to coordinate all the knowledge and the resources from these different agencies and make sure that, you know, there's not something that people aren't aware of or a problem that's not being addressed.
It's a great group of people. We rely tremendously on the nonprofits in Juneau that have, you know, we are blessed with excellent nonprofits in Juneau. And so they have a lot of knowledge. They know, Tuesday was the recent point in time count for homelessness. And so they know, you know, or they're figuring out the numbers from that one. But they have a good idea of how many people are homeless, what their needs are, so what type of housing is needed. And some of the agencies like Family Promise work with families. Others work with more with single people. St. Vincent de Paul houses all, you know. So it's a good group of people, and it spans the warming shelter, emergency shelter, all the way through to placing people in homes that they can live in.
So, is there sort of a short-term, medium-term, long-term goals that are being identified when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, short-term is finish the projects that are already started. Medium-term is keep getting new projects going. And long-term is house people. Make sure you can house
solve it in some
most
way.
People.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, get to sort of a functional zero.
Because it seems it's one of those issues that, you know, kind of sometimes seems intractable or a little hopeless or, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it just seems like there's one of those things you almost can throw your hands up and go, well, what can I do? You know, there's nothing to do. But it's so heartening to hear that there's agencies that do not take that attitude, that instead say, we are going to solve this.
Yeah. And there's a real effort right now to build a fund for the council so that they are able to move forward. So you have to think about this, that all these nonprofits, agency directors are running all their programs, doing all their things. And then they say, OK, we'll go build a housing, or we'll go remodel housing and make that work. And that's just a lot of stress on an organization. And we've had several organizations step up and do that. So we're trying to assist with that and make sure more organizations know how to do it. What's the roadmap for getting this done? And also providing that funding right at the beginning so you can do the hazmat study on an old building and get the structural, you know, report done and develop a blueprint for what that might be used for an architectural blueprint. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Because there is opportunity. And as most people in our community know, housing is an issue at all levels, but there is no one other than these nonprofits who are developing housing for people who have income at less than 30% of the average or area median income.
So. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's headway being made, right? I mean, making headway,
yeah.
Little by little.
Yep.
But boy, the Housing First project really seemed to take a big move forward, and it got the community really, you know, kind of energized and working on it and seeing that some progress could be made. And I think that it just does seem like there's some progress being made.
Yeah. I think there's a lot, and these conversations are also giving those organizations that haven't built in maybe a while, and so they have new leadership and all levels, an idea about how do we do this? You know, Gaston Human Services is thinking, well, maybe we can do this. So we're looking at all different things, and they'll be there as a group. They set priorities and are able to decide how they want to, you know, what's moving forward, when, where do we get money. It's a really collaborative effort because they all work with the same population. So, yeah.
Well, this is such great news just to hear it. And thanks for the update. And thanks for letting our audience kind of know that there's things happening here. Is there any message or anything you want to let people know, or either ways they could be involved or ways that they can contribute either their opinion or their money or resources or volunteer efforts?
I think at this point, it's mostly if you can make a contribution at the Juno Community Foundation. So Juno, CF for communityfoundation.org. And you'll see two buttons on our homepage. And one is Feeding Juno Kids. And the other is the Juno Nonprofit Housing Development Council. Because that's the other effort, is letting people know about it and also raising those funds so we have funds available to cover those expenses that can get a project off the ground.
Because that's one thing I think that's powerful about your organization. You are an endowed organization, but you use a lot of what you do to raise funds. I mean, you sort of are you're using the resources you have in order to kind of create and embellish and make sure that you've got long-lasting and ongoing funding for these projects.
Exactly. You know, we've got some endowments and other on these sorts of projects, we're raising funds to be spent now. And then working with organizations on their long-term endowments, things like that. So, yeah, it's great.
Amy Skilbred, Executive Director of the Juneau Community Foundation, thank you so much. Thanks for coming in and just giving us an update on this very important project, these two very important pieces of all of the work that you do. Great to hear from you. And once again, the food bank, that's great information that the food bank is really in need right now. So if anyone out there is thinking about donations, that's a great place to direct it. And then if you want to get involved, you can go to JunoCF.org.
Correct.
And that's the place that you can contribute either to a food drive or also to the Nonprofit Housing Development Council. Amy, thanks so much.
Great. Well, great to be here. Yes. Thank you.
And thanks for all the great work that Juneau Community Foundation does.
Thanks.
That's the Juno Ensemble. We just heard a little sampling. Thank you very much. That was lovely. And Shah, I'll maybe just ask you to, hello, how are you?
Yeah.
And just that microphone right there is the one that you can just, sorry, you have to lean down to it. We have a lot of people in the room here right now, which includes, by the way, I'll just introduce everyone. Elizabeth, Sam, and Lua are all here. That's who you just heard playing. Those are all violins, right? There's no viola in there or anything.
There's one viola.
There's a viola. That's a viola. Okay, so at least I knew to ask. That was a viola. Shah, thank you so much for bringing the Juno Ensemble in. And tell me just a little bit, you're going to be playing February 11th, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about that. It's at the Northern Lights Church, is that right?
Yeah, Northern Lights Church, 7 o'clock Saturday night.
7 o'clock Saturday at the Northern Lights Church, okay. And tell me, are these just a few of the musicians that are in the Juno Ensemble? Maybe I'll ask Elizabeth that question. Elizabeth, we'll just go around the room and ask everyone. Yeah, just lean into the microphone situation here, just for people listening at home. We've only got a few mics in here, so people have to talk around. But hi. Hello, how are you?
Really excited to be here.
Yeah, and thank you. That was beautiful, that little small piece that we heard. What did we just hear?
Oh, that was Spring by Vivaldi. It's a really nice piece. It's really bright, and it just... it's really energetic, and I think that kind of conveys the energy of our group. So our group actually has middle schoolers, high schoolers, so it's really a combination of a lot of students from different ages, but we're just brought together because we're all just passionate about music.
Cool.
And we've been working hard at our music for about a year, and we're going to be practicing and performing what we've been doing.
It must be nice. I mean, now that pandemic must have, that's hard. That was hard. That was a hard time. We all got through it. But, but boy, to be able to get back into a group and to play in front of a live audience must be pretty exciting.
Really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think even during the pandemic, it was also a good opportunity. I think more music then, more than any other time, has been so important because we had masks on. It was sometimes hard to see people talking, but through music, we were still able to communicate and connect with our audience.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So about how many people, Sam, are you going to talk? Yeah, I'm going to get Sam to talk. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. How are you? Thank you for playing that. I really appreciate it. About just, you don't have to know the exact number, but about how many people would you say are involved in the whole group?
I would say probably around 30 to 40 people.
Oh, okay. Wow. So are there times when you all play together as one?
Yeah.
What are the pieces that you guys all play together as one typically, or what are a few of them?
Well, we play Harry Potter, Pirates of the Caribbean, Spring. I mean,
some crowd pleasers.
Yeah.
Right. I like that. The Harry Potter one. Right. That's very good. So, and it's all strings.
Yes.
And what are the different instruments that are represented with the strings?
So there's violin 1 and 2, viola, cello, and then bass.
When you say violin 1 and 2, what's the difference? I don't know the difference.
So violin 1, usually plays more of the melody, and violin two plays harmony.
Same instrument, but different parts that they're playing. I see. Okay. I guess I do get it. Lua, I'm going to ask you to come up and speak as well. Tell me about, so you're playing a viola.
Yes.
Now, why did you go with a viola instead of a violin? It seems like violin gets all the glamour.
Well, actually, I've been playing the violin for 10 years, and I just decided to learn viola about a year and a half ago.
Is it very different?
It's not that different. Takes a little while to get used to because it's a bit bigger. But I just really like the deep sound it has.
Does it? Am I right in thinking that it just plays down a few octaves, or is that right? Or how does what's the difference? How would you describe the difference between the viola and the violin?
It has like the same four strings that are like the same distance apart, but it's just like a few notes down.
And you do hear that much kind of very rich sound that comes out of the viola. Yeah. Are there certain pieces that are specifically written for viola versus violin that are like the kind of, okay, we're playing this one. This is a good one.
I think there is, but I really like playing a lot of the songs I play in violin and viola too.
Oh, cool. Well, can we get you guys to play another piece?
Yeah, for sure.
We'll get you to play another piece. And just so you have an upcoming performance, it's called Chamber Music Night, classical music concert by the Aurora Strings and Ursa Major Ensembles, and guest performer Franz Fielkel. Okay, and that's the Juno Symphony. That's February 11th. And then just very quickly, there's going to be a Carnegie Hall experience. What is that about? Does someone want to? Yeah, well, Elizabeth.
Yeah, so we actually went to Carnegie Hall over the summer 2022. So we were there over June. And it was just really amazing getting to be in that really grand hall that we've heard so much about. Like, as a musician, that's about the peak of, like, as it gets, as good as it gets, really. And it was just amazing.
There's that old joke, right? How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
Did
you get to play in Carnegie Hall?
We did get to play there. We were one of only about three or four groups selected to play there from around the world.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Amazing. And just as probably a dumb question, but could you really tell the acoustics? And I mean, did it just knock your socks off?
Oh, it really did knock our socks off. We went on there on stage, and like, we had a rehearsal there before our actual performance. And I think everyone was just in awe after performance.
Wow, that's so cool. What a great experience.
It was.
Okay, so let's hear another piece. What are we going to hear next?
So this is Swan Lake by Tchaikovsky, and this is actually a quartet piece. So a lot of the music we'll be hearing on the 11th is a whole orchestra piece, but this is a quartet with just three of our members here. We have a fourth cello coming on Saturday.
Very cool. Okay, Swan Lake. That was it. It was a little snippet of it. Okay,
yes.
You caught me off guard. I was about to take a picture of you guys playing, and you caught me off guard. But do you have another one that you might be able to play? Okay, let's hear another piece. This is the Juno Ensemble, and it's Elizabeth and Lua and Sam all playing.
So this next piece is America from the West Side Story movie, and it's by Stephen Sondheim and music by Leonard Bernstein.
Very cool. Very good. Elizabeth, I'm going to put you on a spot for just a minute here. Can I ask you, where are you right now? Just this always interests me when I talk to musicians, especially developing musicians. Where are you right now in – what are you working on? What are the things that you're working on with your instrument right now? Is it tonal quality? Is it the speed of your fingers? I mean, what are the things that you're right now thinking, I really want to get this down?
Well, that's a really great question, actually. So I think with music – well, I've been playing now – So I started when I was 4 and I'm 16 now. So I've been playing 12 years. And I think for a long time, it's about technique. It's just getting the notes right, getting the rhythm right. But I think now, even more important than that, is just learning to play with others. I used to think like music was kind of an individual thing. Like I
practice. It can be. Right? Yeah.
Like you practice by yourself, but then you come to an orchestra and that's what it's really about. It's about listening to the people around you and syncing your music and making sure you play with them. And I think that's what I'm working on now.
I mean, even all musicians talk about like jamming, you know, getting a groove, getting it, you know, all that stuff. And so I'm sure that that's the orchestral version of that, right?
Exactly.
Hearing, responding. But then you also have to respond and watch your conductor. And Shaw is being the conductor in here right now as we're even doing those very short pieces. What are you picking up from the conductor when you're playing these pieces?
Well, I think Mr. Shaw just does a great job. He does a great job directing us, making sure we're all on track. And I think more than anything, he's an inspiration to us with his energy. Like we go to orchestra every Sunday and it's at the end of a week, but he's just always just so energetic there, and that makes us inspired to play better.
Sam, can I get you to step up to the microphone again to tell me how long you've been playing, or since how old were you when you started playing?
So I think I started when I was in first or second grade.
Maybe 7 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7 years old.
And do you feel like in the last few years you've really taken leaps and bounds, or how do you feel like that development has happened for you?
Yeah, so I feel like sometimes you get to a point where you just feel stuck, but then you can get a leap. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure so many people relate to just having an instrument or starting an instrument. And, you know, there's that practice part of it where it just feels like you're not getting it. You know, you just aren't getting it. But are you getting more and more times now when you feel like you are getting it or getting over the hump quicker than you have in the past?
Yeah, I've been noticing improvements, I guess.
Yeah. I
think the most important thing is just when you're stuck to take a break and come back to it, because sometimes you'll just leap forward.
Does playing Lua, I'll ask you to step up as well, because we're just want to make sure we're asking everyone. But does playing in a group, I'm guessing playing in a group would help with that sort of fun factor, number one,
yes.
Right? And then just help you kind of learn and learn in different ways.
Yeah, I think it's very motivating to like every Sunday, like it helps me keep practicing. Sometimes like I'll get burnt out for a while and like just get bored with it, but playing in a group is always so fun. It just helps you like keep going, keeps me motivated.
Yeah, cool. Well, I really appreciate hearing from all of you. Do you have one more piece to do, or was that it, kind of?
We do have one piece for you. And now, actually, as our last piece, it's a snippet. It's definitely a crowd pleaser. It's Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
And it's the end credits theme. So
very cool. Let's hear it. And Sha, yeah.
By the way, Elizabeth is the concertmaster for the Juno String Ensemble. Sam is the principal second violin. Lua is principal for the viola section.
Okay, principal for viola, second violin, Sam, and you were saying, I'm sorry.
Elizabeth concertmaster.
Okay, and can say that one more time. I'm sorry, I'm just not understanding.
Concertmaster.
Oh, okay. So that is that's your role in the orchestra when
yes,
you're playing.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. All right. Well, this is Pirates of the Caribbean. Let's hear it. Thank you very much. Appreciate that so much. It's really wonderful to hear you play. And the upcoming performance is happening February 11th. It's at 7 p.m. at the Northern Light United Church. And tickets are $15. And it's available on the website for the Juno Ensemble. Thanks so much to all of you for coming in and for letting me learn about what you do a little bit more, and also for letting us hear all your great music.
Well,
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll see you at the concert.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you. And that's it for Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening.